are listening to Blue Yonder with your hosts, Jim Jones, Peter Streets, and introducing Aaron Hubbard.
I just feel kind of bad because, like, I kind of lost my fucking faith in Inception.
Lost your faith?
You become an Inception apostate?
No, it's just, no, not at all. Like, I felt that I had the true faith. And
did you see it again?
I did not see it again, but I read some of the reviews that Jim was giving me. And I think I have a serious flaw in my concept of what Limbo is.
Ooh. Which is what?
Okay, well, before we get into this, I think we should run down a couple things for the audience, just so they know, like, where we're coming from, what we're talking about. First of all, hardcore mega fucking spoilers. If you haven't seen this movie, or you want to see it again without knowing everything, forget about this cast. Turn it off right now.
Get out of here.
Yeah, go fuck yourself in a corner, because this is not the cast for you.
Or just listen to another Power Play or Blue Yonder episode.
No, don't even do that. Get off our site. Go away.
It's just too tempting.
Actually, just go see Limbo first. I mean, Inception.
Okay, second of all, everybody calls Leo's character Cobb. We have been calling him Dom. That's his first name. Mm-hmm. So if we use that, don't get confused.
Well, we interchange, like, Dom, Cobb, Leo, Mal, Maul, Mel. I mean, yeah. we're pretty
fluid. If we're
fluid.
Close to the name, it's probably the name.
Yeah.
I still don't know all the names of the characters.
Like the
one, you'll pick them up.
Yeah.
And the last thing is, we need to talk about which level is which, because we're going to refer to them probably by number, I would guess. And a lot of the charts that I've seen have reality as number one. And the first dream is number two. We don't do that.
That's fucking stupid. If you buy the first level as being reality, then
then it's not a level.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's dream layers. So first dream layer is the van and the kidnapping, and that would be level one or layer one. Second one would be the hotel. Third one would be the GoldenEye snow level. And
the stack,
and
the
depending
facility.
On which theory you subscribe to, number four is either Limbo or Dom's dream.
Dom DeLuise. I would say that was my theory at first.
And then level five would be
that level Limbo. Five wasn't necessarily a level because it was outside of the level hierarchy.
Yeah, you just got Limbo.
It was just Limbo. Limbo, like reality, is not a layer. Just like reality shouldn't be one, Limbo shouldn't be five, because reality and Limbo are like the opposite ends of the cake leveling system.
Well, we'll just say that number four,
one's like
of which
infinite
theory.
Awareness and truth, and the other's the infinite abyss of dreaming.
Okay. Well, we'll just say that layer four, regardless of which theory you subscribe to, is the city where all of his prior homes were, his apartments and their old house and stuff.
Yes.
And where the dollhouse with the safe is.
Yeah. And that's what supposedly people are saying that was Limbo. And I have some serious problems with that. I still do have problems with that.
I do too, but I was running some of this over the gym last night, and I think there's a few, maybe I need to see it one more time to wrap up some of the inconsistencies in Limbo, because I've got some things that I think, you know, well, let's just go, this is the wrong time to talk about it.
Okay. How are we going to approach this? Because it's,
well, I mean, let's talk about, Peter's theory first.
Okay, yeah, let's run down.
Let's just go around the table, and we'll go Peter, maybe Jim, because Jim and I see eye to eye 90%, and then I can talk about the difference between Jim and I. Jim and I is
Jim
twin.
And
I. So,
the,
yeah.
The constellation.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I'm a Gemini, guys. No. Get to the chopper! Oh! What I guess if I'm starting, here was my original theory and idea. After my first viewing, now bear in mind, all our listeners know that they haven't seen it, they should go away, so I'm just going to take for granted that everybody listening has seen the film, like I have. And I have seen the movie just one time, and I'm looking forward to my next viewing, because I'm definitely going to see it again. I've been wanting to see it again for days since my first viewing. But initially, my idea was, this is too easy. I know exactly what's going on here, and this is what's going on. The entire fucking story...
That should have been your first clue. This is too easy.
Yeah, right. Well, here's why I thought it was easy. This is what I thought was going on, and I'll tell you why. I thought the whole dream, or the whole movie, was taking place inside Dom DeLuise.
No, Cobbs. Cobbs
Limbo. That's the big thing, folks. Guess what? Rise and shine, fucking dreamers. Because the entire thing is in Cobb's limbo state. And this is why. Because when they're on what we all agree is level one of the dream sequence, when they're riding along and it's this intense moment when they realize this guy they're trying to pull this inception job on has a very sophisticated and militarized and trained professional subconscious that's highly defensive and armed in the dream trying to kill them. They don't expect this. And Cobb's character, when one of the guys gets shot by this militarized subconscious, he's like, we'll take him out of the equation. Let's just kill him and he'll wake up. And then Cobb's like, whoa, wait a minute. If you shoot him at this level of, since we're drugged with this special drug that's going to allow us to go down layers in a stable way, since we're that deeply under the influence of this sedative, when you kill someone that's been introduced to this sedative, they will not wake up. They will go directly to limbo. And limbo was, everybody, when they heard that, was like, oh my God, no. Oh, we're stuck here and all this stuff. And it became really tense. Very good scene. But the entire deal with limbo is that you may not wake up. You may become a coma. You may go into a coma.
You basically will wake up. You just will not. You
it
may
will take
not
an extremely long time.
You may not survive the toll.
You may go mad.
Yeah, and I've also heard, you know, that described by that one actor in the film that it's possible you would go into a coma. So, I mean, it's not a good thing. You might be, your mind might actually just stop working. You know, it's kind of very loosely defined in the movie as to all the ramifications of limbo, but it's definitely presented to you as a bad thing. Like, nobody wants to be there because who knows if you'll ever rise and see the real world again. So that's it. So if it was just another dream layer that somebody could splash water on your face and wake you up from, it wouldn't have been a serious threat. And it sounded to me like it was a very serious threat that may endanger your life. So nobody is asking Cobb at this point how in the hell he knows that. Nobody. And when I was reflecting back on the movie, I was under the impression when him and his wife were together in that shared state when they were dreaming up their world and living in it. And he gave us the exact time period. He said that like 1 second in the real world was, you know, long enough to live, you know, years in the depth that he went with his wife. I was under the impression they were not sharing a limbo state, that they were creating this shared reality based on the rules of dream layers. And that they were actually going deeply, deeply down, so that when he convinced her to kill herself in the dream to rise above to reality, that they actually sent themselves into limbo. Because if you're so deep and you kill yourself, according to what Cobb just said, you're going to go to limbo. So him and his wife were very deep, and they killed themselves, so wouldn't that mean that they would have gone directly to the limbo? At first this bothered me because I thought, oh my God, it's a big contradiction in the film, because clearly we couldn't have the plot of the movie even happening on screen in front of us right now if killing himself with his wife on the train tracks caused them to go into limbo. And that pissed me off until I was like, oh, haha, wait a minute. That just is him telling the people paying attention that the entire movie is in Leo's limbo state. And there is my original thoughts. And that's the biggest thing that I thought of when I left the film the first time.
So what do you see? Because I see there's two problems with that theory. But what you say you've since realized there's a fatal flaw of the theory too.
Well,
describe that.
Okay, let me. This is a conclusion. That's not a conclusion, actually. It's something that I'm identifying as a flaw in my plan, because if that were true, apparently I was actually in a dream state of some sort during some parts of the movie, because during the interviews that I've been reading, apparently at some point in the film it's described that Limbo is in fact is presented in the film as being a shared state of dream. So while Cobb was warning everybody they'd go into limbo, he was telling everybody that if you shoot them, well, not necessarily that, but that they would be in an individual limbo. As I understand, limbo would be an individuality totally off the network of shared dreaming. It's your own deep sleep, and it can only be singular. That was my impression. That's why I thought what I thought. But apparently it's mentioned at some points during the film that limbo can be shared, even though it seems like, because I'm thinking about work groups and networks for computer systems.
It'd be shared by everyone connected by the machine.
Well, I was going to say the main thing that shows that in the movie is that they talk about how it will repopulate with whoever has been in limbo. Like all the things that they create in limbo will be repopulated into limbo again, and then they say, since you're the only one who's been Dom, it would be yours. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a shared space for sure.
See, I see the limbo as kind of being like the loader mechanism of Matrix, that like everybody that's connected into that particular node, or by the dream machine, when they if they're in a deep state and they die with under, I think it's the deep sedation is what does it.
Yeah. It
has because what happens in my mind is you should wake up, but you're so deeply sedated you can't wake up.
Yeah.
So your brain, instead of waking you up, it sends out the response where you think you're woke up, so you're out of the dream, but there's no place for your consciousness to go. So it just goes to what they call the unstructured dream state, where no architect has set something out. Your brain hasn't gotten any kind, because it's not a natural state. It's just this blank kind of, they call it the. Didn't they say something about you wake up on the shore of limbo?
Yeah.
Because they always show a metaphor of people waking up in the shore.
Being washed up. Yeah.
Being washed. Yeah, washing up on the shore of limbo. So it's like that. Everyone connected to the same machine in the real world would end up in limbo if everyone died one by one. That's how I took that.
And that's another piece of my evidence, Aaron, is that I strongly feel that each time they were showing limbo, like in the beginning of the film, they start the film the way they end the film, and that's famous for Nolan ever since Memento, because he
sure.
likes to tell the beginning and have it be the end. He likes to tell
right.
things in reverse. And he did the same thing when he started the movie. The first shot of the movie is Leo's character in the ocean, kind of with sand in his face, on the shores of limbo, and they show him again arrive on those shores after what we have all called the fourth level, that city house level where he was talking with his wife and he actually took the chick, as I call her. What's her name?
Ariadne.
Yeah, Ariadne.
Elaine Page, right?
Ellen Page.
So she went with him to that fourth level, but only after she got kicked up all the way to the what was supposedly reality and left Cobb behind? Did Cobb then jump off the building, kill himself, and then arrive on the shores of Limbo?
Which I dispute that. I dispute that version.
I have a very hard time believing that that's true as well, but I understand why you're saying
yes.
It and why people can think that.
Yes.
Well, I actually feel like the movie does point to that being exactly correct. However, there are a couple things that don't jive with that. Like, for instance, what I just mentioned about them saying that your consciousness will, or your subconscious will repopulate Limbo with whatever you've created in it before. Well, the only time we ever see anything that is that similar is when we see the city and the apartments and the homes of Dom and Mal. And in fact, I believe that when they say that, they have just washed up on those same shores.
The only thing is, if that's true, literally, then why? And we all agree that where Sato is at the end is Limbo.
Yes.
Wasn't that? Why was that just a lone fortress? Why wasn't the lone fortress there and all of Cobb's bullshit too? See, I'm actually starting to think that Cobb had never been to Limbo. What they refer as true unstructured dream space Limbo.
Wait. Then that.
Because you're right. I mean, it's inconsistent. When he went to go to DeSato's Limbo, which is a shared Limbo space, he should have. There's two things. My problem is, they got to the quote unquote limbic level, in the movie. Him and Ariadne got there together by hooking a dream machine to themselves on level 3, the Golden Eye Snow Fortress.
Yeah,
and going to sleep. And descending that level. I dispute that you can get to fucking Limbo.
Why?
Just by going, okay.
Why?
So every time you go 4 levels deep, you're magically in Limbo.
Possibly.
What is it in the movie
that says that that's not true?
Because the fact that if they died on the first level, they'd have gone to Limbo.
Okay.
To me, it's dying under sedation that gets you to Limbo.
Yeah.
There's two other bombs I need to drop on y'all.
Alright.
I think one of my theories is that Leo, or that Dom and his wife, Cobb and Mal, died twice. Once as young people to get the Limbo, and once as old people to get out of Limbo. Because that neatly explains why in one flashback they are young people, and in another flashback they are old people.
That would actually mean that their city could be Limbo.
Yes.
And that level 4 could be Limbo.
But I think that what level 4 is Dom's personal conscious that has not been, like, you saw his consciousness that he had built as a prison for his wife's projection.
Yeah.
When he was experimenting or testing the dream drug, he says it's the only way he can dream. I don't know if that's true. I think if he dreams natural sleep where his wife is part of his subconscious, his guilt runs rampant, and he hasn't carefully constructed cells for it to live in, that looks like Limbo.
I have
because
a big
his,
problem with
and,
that. Because
but he's also – it reflects how deranged he is because everything's in disrepair and is falling apart.
Sure, and I can see that. Or that disrepair could also mean that he hasn't been there in a long time. However, I have a big problem with that because it throws out things that are definitively stated in the movie.
Like?
Well, for one, we haven't talked about it yet, but it throws out the ring.
How so?
It totally ignores the ring.
My version?
Yeah.
How? Because the ring is a big...
Let's talk about the ring's importance.
Yeah, because there's two...
I wanted to say, like, why would they go to the trouble of establishing that rule of Limbo that everything repopulates if they were not going to use it?
Well,
the other thing is,
I don't know. I need to see the exact quote because I don't know that it says what you're saying it does.
It absolutely does.
Well,
I mean,
I just don't know. So you might be right.
I don't remember that quote at all. Period.
I am not making it up.
It does seem like that's a really odd thing for them to say about Limbo. That, you know,
and then not use it. Like,
but it doesn't. It's not consistent with the fact. like I said, it seems like...
because Arthur tells him, like, Arthur says Dom's the only one that's been to Limbo, so it's obviously going to be his Limbo will populate it.
Like, well, the other thing is, like, I don't want to get into the whole, you know, Christopher Nolan, because I don't believe Christopher Nolan misleads the audience. However, a case could be made that, as far as we know, only one person's been to Limbo, that's Dom, and no one really knew what the fuck was going to happen. Okay. So he could easily just be wrong about that. But my bedrock, and I haven't heard anything to convince me otherwise, is you can't get to Limbo just by going deeper into dream levels.
Why? I don't understand how you've arrived at that solid, concrete conclusion.
Because they would be pretty fucking stupid to delve – go ahead and delve three levels deep if one more level down they'd hit Limbo. I mean, doesn't that seem kind of risky?
I mean, how is it any more risky than?
And
if we
the other thing
this,
is, well, but
any level we're going to Limbo.
Yeah, but I don't understand.
He's already taking massive risks.
It just there's nothing in the movie that says they it, never say.
But there's nothing in the movie that says that you can't go to Limbo by going deep enough. Like if you were to go into a deep enough sleep and
yes,
deep
I can't disprove
state,
your theory that
but
there's
you can't
no evidence.
Your own. That's what I'm saying. There's
yes,
no
I can.
Evidence to support yours.
The
Why?
Evidence says that you die in a deeply sedated dream, you go to Limbo. There's no evidence
okay.
that says you can just keep dreaming deeper and get
so
to Limbo.
You're,
which
so
is
you're
why
going
I'm
to
saying,
make something up.
No, I'm not making up. I think it's shown in the movie that Cobb and Mal die twice.
Okay.
Once they died under deep sedation to get to Limbo, which they did not know was going to happen.
Sure.
And they killed themselves afterwards to get out of Limbo.
Just like Saito and Leo.
Just like Saito
end.
And Cobb do at the end. Which okay, that blows my mind how and my theory is that you are stuck in Limbo, and Limbo is a very disorientating experience, which is another reason why I don't think level 4 is Limbo, because Dom and Adri God damn it.
Huh?
Ellen Page and Cobb yeah. knew exactly. They had no memory problems down there. They were not disorientated.
Sure.
They operated normally. And to me,
yeah,
that's another
they were,
that can't be
they're all awakened. Here's the other thing. Kicks aren't supposed to be able to get you out of Limbo. I mean,
right.
if a kick got you out of Limbo, then
exactly.
What's
people, the, yeah, you could just be kicked
how is
out.
It risky to go to Limbo when you can be kicked out of it.
Yeah, like basically, if you're stuck in Limbo, then the other people would wake up and they could just tip your chair over and you'd be out.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's a good point.
So it's like, to me, the evidence points the fact that he, and again, Chris Nolan doesn't do anything by accident, according to these interviews we're seeing leak out by the actors. He showed them dying two separate times. Now,
yeah.
you can.
He showed them dying. Two separate times at the same time.
You can explain the fact by saying, well, it's a dream world and they're seeing different projections, and he does fuck with you a little bit about like showing people's mirror images being different.
Yeah.
But I do think yeah. the fact that he shows them once dying as young, and they and even the dialogue that they use like was really weird about, you know, you hear a train, you don't know where it's going, you don't know where it's to take you, and mm-hmm. you're kind of afraid, but it doesn't matter because we'll be together. I think that was like what Leo said to her to get her to try the experiment in the first place.
Yeah.
And then they arrived at Limbo, and I don't know, this is stuff that's speculation, but they arrive at Limbo, they're disorientated, they're confused, they don't know what's going on, they still think they're in a dream, and you know, years and years and years and years pass in this dream world. Leo somehow realizes that it's not a dream. And his wife, Mal, refuses to accept that, and that's symbolically shown by her subconscious locking away her totem. You know, like throwing away the key to the prison, and so then he goes and searches it. Probably takes him years to find where that's at in her subconscious and flips that idea around, which again convinces her, I think, that the only way to get out of Limbo is to somehow ground yourself in reality and figure out that it's a dream. And then you kill yourself, and then Limbo just becomes – it's now structured dream space.
Man, I find that hard to believe because they're talking about, like you said, how crazy and disorienting and maddening Limbo is. How is Dom to figure out?
But he did. That's in the movie. He said that the fact that it was unreal and like it was fun at first, but then the unreality crept in onto him and drove him crazy and he had to get out. I mean, somehow he figured out that it wasn't real. I mean, so it's like my theory requires a little bit of guesswork.
Here's
but
here's a couple
lot
of things. Like, first of all, I didn't necessarily think when they showed those flashbacks of them on the tracks as old people that it was saying that they had died twice, because they were holding themselves in identical positions. It was just like letting the audience in on the fact that they, in fact, had been in the equivalent of a lifetime together. I think there are some important...
That's possible. I can't find any flaw with that, except for my theory tells us something about Limbo.
Right. And here's the other thing. Did you guys ever notice that at the end of the film, when Leo's character Cobb is sitting at the table with... What's the guy's name?
Saito.
Okay, Saito. He's sitting there at the table with Saito. And tomato, and he is looking him in the eyes across the table. They're doing their little, they're saying their thing. But did you notice how his eyes were like completely black?
I did. It kind of was freaky a little bit.
I think it just
because eyes were absolutely. I think he.
No, I thought so at first too.
Listen. Listen, his pupils were, his like entire eye was pupil. And I think that's an important point. I really do.
Because especially since it's not based in reality. If you go watch it again, that's a certain trick of the light. But then when he shifts his eyes, you can see that his pupils are fucking dilated because it's a dark room. But you definitely can see his iris and all that.
Yeah, I felt while creepy, watching it. Yeah, I did feel that they were extremely creepy, but I also felt that it wasn't unnaturally so. I felt that it was like a trick of the light.
I saw the same thing, but then when he kind of shifted his head and you could see it into the light a little bit more, because he's got really dark brown eyes, apparently. And he's in a dark room, so his pupils are big, but not like, you know, unnaturally dilated. But the other thing we need to talk about are what I feel are there's a lot of debate about whether the whole movie's a dream or not. We're arguing about now what Limbo is and how many times they visited and all that, but it sounds like we're all in agreement, which surprises me, because I didn't hear what made him kind of shake his faith. But there's two things that are, I think, indisputable as far as what Christopher Nolan has given us as, you know, anchors to what we can anchor our sense of reality in. One is the totem, which is kind of clumsily explained in the movie as a way to determine whether you're in someone else's dream or your own dream or not. But Dom and or Cobb and Mal used it to detect whether they were dreaming, period. And when that thing falls, the implication is you're in the real world. When it stays spinning, you're in the dream world.
Let me
see. And the other thing is, before you dispute that, I just want to throw out the final anchor and fire away. The second anchor is Cobb wears a wedding ring in every dream sequence. When he's in the quote-unquote real world, he is not wearing a wedding ring. Yep. And that, if you believe the real world, like the level zero is the real world, it is absolutely consistent. Every scene taking place in reality, he is not wearing his wedding ring. Every scene taking place in a dream level, he is wearing his wedding ring.
Yeah.
And the other, I've heard people disclaim that as saying, well, that's his attachment to Mal. But after he blows her off and he's down in Saito's
limbo,
he's still fucking wearing his wedding ring.
Yep.
So those are the two things that I think are the most important kind of groundings in reality that people have to either explain away by saying, well, it's all in a dream and then nothing makes sense. But then... you know, you could say, well, there's a pink unicorn that's an invisible pink unicorn that's in every scene too, and you couldn't disprove
that. And
that
brings me to my final point of evidence. In every scene of this film, there is a pink unicorn, and it's in the background.
There's one other one.
I actually have a third one
that we talked about last night over ping pong, if you want to talk about unreality. But are you talking about the Mal?
Yeah,
out for us.
If you notice, Mal is not in any of the scenes that are portrayed as reality. She is not found there. Actually, there's a fourth one, too, which is a little shakier, where okay. people
Who's
say...
Mal?
Let's finish this. Let's finish
Mal's
this.
Mal's his wife. Yeah, okay. And she... Is she in every dream sequence?
The only sequence that she's not in...
is the training one, right?
No, she's in every one of those, too.
The first training one.
No.
Although, yeah, they never leave. They're still in that one.
Right. The only one that I can think of that she's not in is the layer one of the first Sato Gambit. In the opening of the movie where they first start off in like the Asian fortress, then they come out of that and they're in like some kind of South American banana republic. I don't remember her being in that level. But every other dream sequence in the whole movie, every other level she makes an appearance in.
She's the one that screws things up in the very opening. She's
No, she's in there, but I'm saying she's not in the second next level. I was just trying to be
thought she was. I'm pretty sure she was.
Maybe she's in the crowd. That'd be kind of creepy. But I do know that she's in every single time they go into a dream world, she's in it. And then in reality, she's nowhere to be found. Not even a reflection. Not even a shadow. Not even the sound of her voice.
Right, yeah.
So that's almost like a third totem for the audience.
And his kids are nowhere to be found either in those.
Yeah.
He talks to them on the phone one time. And people were saying that the girl that he talks to sounds a lot older. Mm-hmm. Than the girl actually
that's
was
so,
in the film.
That's so subjective.
I agree totally, because I'm sure Dakota Fanning sounds like she's 40,
right?
Whereas,
right,
I don't know, a regular girl off the street sounds like she's 2.
Right.
Dakota Fanning sounds extremely mature. She's like a really good actor. Anyway, there was another one that I was going to say. When they're in the dream states, they actually show other scenes that Dom is not in that are dreams. Like, if you were going to say, well, the whole thing is Dom's dream, shouldn't he be dreaming from his own perspective, not from the perspective of, like, let's say, Arthur and Ariadne when they're training?
No, not at all, because the subconscious mind creates these independent agents. I mean, we see...
I understand what you're saying. Like, for example, we see Ames go around doing a bunch of stuff solo, all by himself.
Why would Dom be on another level of consciousness?
Why? Yeah, that doesn't that yeah, that's a good that's a that's not the strongest, but
sure,
it's more evident.
Extremely strong, but it's yeah. Just put it on the pile. Well,
I mean, how can you have taxi drivers driving around a city and people with guns shooting? You know, they're doing all kinds of independent things.
Yeah, but that's
because
that's the
subconscious.
That's because that's all. Okay, there's the other thing I think that you got to understand about the dream world is, you know, there's the dreamer, and that's never the target. The dreamer is the one that's actually taking the plan that the architect makes and making it a reality by constructing the dream space. Then you've got the target who his subconscious is pulled into that world, and if you do your job as an architect right, he won't realize it's not his own dream, so his subconscious moves around and acts as if it's just a normal dream. So all those agents, all the taxi cabs, all the stuff are subconscious projections.
Right, and what I'm saying is that all the other characters would be subconscious projections.
No, they're hooked up to the dream machine. Yeah, they're actually free agents. They're not projections.
I understand that's what the movie's telling you, but I'm saying that if, in fact, they were all, you know, it was all taking place in limbo, then the subconscious mind could create those other characters.
Sure, if it's all one giant dream, yeah.
But, like, for example, Peter Fisher's dream or his subconscious, I doubt he knew anything. I mean, obviously he didn't know what the other characters were doing.
But here's what I'm saying. You don't – when you dream, you don't dream from other –
yeah, and I'm saying, if it was Cobb's dream, it would be like – he would be the same as Fisher, not knowing what was going on when things weren't taking place right in front of him.
Yeah, and he would also be the one who was being shown the entire time, because you're not
– yes.
When you dream, you're not dreaming about what George Bush is doing at the moment.
Yes.
You're dreaming about what you're doing and what is happening around you.
Right. That's not nearly as strong as the other three pieces. The totem and wedding ring are unassailable. Or at least you have to pretend that they don't exist, or they're a figment of your dream imagination, and that, you know, Christopher Nolan's just fucking with you to make it work.
Yeah, but Nolan really does fuck with you, doesn't he?
No, he's not. He's not that type of director. That's not saying he couldn't start, but the other thing is Mal is a pretty good line of evidence, too.
Well, for first of all,
and also it's like every other dream is like he's breaking glass. It's like I would like to see some him being in that bar with what's his face and someone in the background break a glass. Then he has to draw attention to it. But like he didn't do any of those things that happened in the dream world, and the things that he did do that said were consistent, like the wedding that were consistent, like the wedding ring and the totem, point to it being reality.
I never noticed the wedding ring, period, in the entirety of the film.
Which is shocking, because yeah, it is presented to you
very clearly. Me and Jim both saw it, but we weren't clear on the last scene. And yeah, we finally did on the second. We both watched it with hawk-like and focus, and we verified the absence of the ring. And the other thing is, my other solid line of evidence is, at the end of the movie, we can all agree that the last thing we see as before the camera winks out is the totem wobbled.
And you hear it. You hear it begin to falter.
You hear it wobble, and you see it wobble. And to me, that's the last. Like, yes, it is ambiguous, but it's almost like Christopher Nolan winking at you, saying,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he's leaving it. That's the thing that I actually kind of like ultimately about this movie, is that it's so ambiguous, and we can have this discussion, and we can't say, no, you're blatantly fucking wrong, because this, mm-hmm, this. We can say, well, I see your point, I just don't get that, and here's what I get from it. And then, well, I see your point. It's just, it leaves so much open to discussion and thinking about it.
Indeed.
And that is awesome. I think that's what artwork should do. It should be open to interpretation and be interactive with the audience, like this movie was with us.
Now, let me ask you this, Peter. Why did you fall out of favor, or have you fallen out of favor with the whole movie as a dream theory?
Well, I'm starting to fall from that lofty throne of mine, because and let me begin by actually deconstructing something that you are actually on my side about, Aaron. And that's this whole idea that you cannot access Limbo from a machine, or that you can't, that it would be stupid to get to Limbo after 3 levels. Initially, I was right on board with that, and I think I was proposing that before any of you were, but let's go by everybody. The machine that they went to rig to him in the James Bond snow level, mm-hmm, they were rigging it up to a guy that had died and gone to Limbo.
No, so, they did not rig it up to him.
Yeah.
He wasn't attached to it.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure, they all had to be attached to it, didn't they?
Everybody that shares anything has to be simultaneously.
Yeah, but I didn't think
Fisher
that Fish,
absolutely
wait,
had to be.
I thought they made it very clear that he was unconnected to the machine, and that's
no,
what something
he
I
had
wanted
to be because he was in that next layer.
Yeah, but he wasn't awake through it. She just threw him off the ledge. Did he actually talk to him?
No, he was moving around and stuff.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I can't. There's another thing that I need to verify in a third setting, because I thought he was disconnected, and that my theory on that was that Mal, as a projection of his subconscious, basically kidnapped Fisher, and them going down another level into Leo's subconscious was there to free Fisher, and then simultaneously from him them freeing Fisher, the other guy's going to bring him back to life in the dream, and that was going to somehow bring them back together.
As I recall, the guy was hit, he was struck, he was dying and bleeding on the floor, and he finally died, and they hooked the machine up to him, knowing that his state would be Limbo.
I didn't think they hooked him up, and the other thing that doesn't make sense is why...
So maybe you can join Limbo as long as you're, as long as the object...
Because they didn't hook up Sato to the machine either.
Well, what I'm saying is that as long as the host is in Limbo, perhaps you can then share the Limbo experience.
No, I think everybody would share the Limbo experience if they were actually in Limbo. That's why
nobody else though shared that. They maintained their levels.
Well, yeah, because they didn't die.
Yeah.
Right.
To me,
but I'm saying
like,
I don't see any evidence.
I see you guys presenting possible things, but I don't see any solid evidence to say that you can get to Limbo just with the machine. Because Limbo is the definition of Limbo is unstructured dream space. The machine provides you structured dream space.
What happens when you hook it up to someone who's in Limbo?
I don't think... I'm not ready to admit that Fisher was hooked up, nor was Sato. But yeah, I know Sato was hooked up to the machine.
Nobody ever died.
Why?
Nobody ever says that.
Well, first of all, if they're hooked up to the machine, you should be able to see, you know...
The thing on the wrist.
And, yeah, and also, I believe that him... Because what's-his-face was out planting explosives... So he wasn't there in the room. And I thought I just saw him, her, and Leo hook it up to themselves and go to sleep. I don't think I didn't see him hook it up to Fisher. Maybe I'm wrong.
I can't remember the
exact
sequence.
But I'm pretty sure they didn't hook it up to Sato. I mean, in absence of them, you seeing them do it or seeing it with it stuck on his arm, I don't think you can say that he did. And my theory is that Leo stayed on the fourth level just to avoid riding the kickback, because I think he actually got the limbo when his body on the first level drowned in the car.
That's a really good theory, and I like that, because the only two people in limbo were the people who drowned.
Yeah.
And I just find it really hard to reconcile that with everything else.
Yeah, I never thought.
I agree, but which is, I think, maybe a third viewing is in order, but like I said, I have problems with that theory too. It's just the one that seems like it's got the least amount of holes. If you stick to, you only get the limbo is to die in deep sedation, and the fact that he showed, one interpretation is that they showed Dom and, or Cobb and Mal dying twice, once to get in limbo, once to get out, and they show Leo and Sato dying
and
not being brought back.
To actually show them not getting out of that van.
Yeah, yeah.
Make it a very big point.
Yeah, and they're all like, oh, and they're like, oh shit, and he's like, no, he's going to be fine. And then him and Sato, basically, the only way to get out of limbo is to realize you're in limbo and then kill yourself. And that's, you actually see as Sato makes the connection and they both make the realization, his hand drifts towards the gun.
Reaches for the gun, yeah.
Which is,
no, it doesn't. Does it really?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
they,
it does.
They close up on it. It's,
yeah, you see his hand obvious. Move from the, you see his hand just a little slide and he almost makes it to the gun, and the next thing you see, Leonardo's opening his eyes. Which I'm pretty sure, I think you said that they cut in, they blur focus to him with his eyes open, implying that maybe it's a dream, you don't remember how to get there. But I actually think I saw him, like, you know,
no,
wake up.
No, they never do that. They do not show that.
I don't know. You've only seen the movie once, and it was like over a week ago. what do you think?
It was Sunday. They do not show that. I know that for a fact. They do not show him opening his eyes slowly in the plane. They all they do is they cut to him in the middle of being awake in the plane. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very creepy.
That might be a way to be another way to be ambiguous, but however, it doesn't really violate the rule of you don't know how you got there, because we saw how he got there. We saw him arrive at the airport, get on the plane, sit down. I mean, we knew exactly how he got there.
We saw Fisher go to the airport.
It wasn't mysterious at all. Yeah. That's the other problem with the real world is there are very solid chains of how they get from place to place. They took a train to the hotel, to the helicopter, to the airport, to Africa.
If you notice, I was going to say that, they go all over the world in what's supposed to be the real world.
Right.
In the dreams, they're confined to just a city.
And they always say, have no idea how you got there. If it was a dream, you would not be able to how did you get here? Remember, think hard. How did you get here?
Dreams are something that people have to design themselves.
Yes.
And so they're by necessity going to be smaller because they have to make mazes, like you were saying.
Yeah, to
so
buy X.
To make the whole world to where they can travel around in it accurately. It would not make sense.
Yeah, to me, it's very. Each passing day, I think about it. I think it's got to be that the ending was real. Again, it's like you can say that it's all a dream, but then you just got to start willy nilly casting aside the dream world, the world rules, and ignoring the totems and ignoring the wedding ring, and that's fine, because I think one of the biggest messages at the end is you get to choose what you believe. Because he started to spin the thing, and he was wanting to make sure it's real, but then he saw his kids, and he's like, fuck it.
Oh, and there are things throughout the movie that are thrown in there to make you question whether or not it's real.
Indeed.
Like when he's talking to his father, and his father says, come back to reality.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's obviously definitely there to make you think it's a dream.
Right, right. And there's a lot of people on the forums, but that's like, to me, I think there's more shallow ways you can analyze a movie, and take the movie and say that one line is the only important thing, and ignore the totems, ignore the absence of Mal's ignore the wedding ring is a pretty shallow analysis of the film. But have you still said why you don't believe that they're in a dream yet?
Why I don't believe they're in a dream?
Yeah,
because it's becoming. Well, I never said I didn't think the whole thing was a dream. I said
I thought
that
you did.
The entire Now, the crux of my argument, though, was that it's entirely a dream because of what Cobb said. And the rule on Limbo going there was that you get really deep into a dream state, then you kill yourself, and at that point you're in Limbo.
Or
and
if you just die, you don't have to kill yourself.
Yeah. Or die.
Yeah, right.
Now let's run that back just a little bit to when he was telling the story of him and his wife. What's his wife's name? Mal, I guess?
Mal. Yeah. It must be Mallory, but they called her Mal.
Okay, so Mal and Cobb are together exploring the boundaries, and as he calls it, he's constantly pushing her. She doesn't necessarily keep going, but he is pushing the limits on how far you can get in a dream state.
Right.
And during finding how deep, she asked him, well, how deep did you go? And he gave the equation, because I guess each layer is 10 to the 10th power of the layer above it.
Except so you have, for the, and under the dread, under the powerful drug, it was 20 times.
Right.
So it's even worse.
Weren't they saying it could be like 1,000 times in Limbo or something?
Well, they said that, like, they did the math, and he goes, I bet a map, but she said that at the bottom level, it would be... okay, they never said it in Limbo, although Cobb said that he was there for 80 human years. No, 50 human years.
No, didn't when...
She said at the bottom level, it'd be 10
years.
It'd
be 10 years,
If they missed the kick...
But in the snow
and
level,
they thought that was bad enough. So in the third level, if they missed their kicks and nobody died,
they'd
be there for 10 years waiting for the drug to wear off.
Yeah.
Right.
But I was going to say in the snow level, right when they were about to go into Limbo, the fourth layer of the dream, whatever you want to call it, didn't Ames say, or Eames, I don't know how you say his name.
I think it's Eames.
Didn't he say that it could be like 1,000 times? We don't know.
Yeah, like I think no one really knows a lot about what Limbo is like, and how much because I think Leo at one point said Limbo is like the time completely breaks down, so it could be fluctuating, it could be, you know, dependent on what you're doing down there. I mean, it's just like you lose all concept of that.
Yeah, kind of like going into a black hole. It just reality, the laws of physics break down. So in my opinion, thinking of it that way, Limbo to me was like a time, like time being compressed down to a point of the infinity of a single point. So
right.
If you compress time completely, then even a nanosecond in reality to your mind in Limbo would be eternity.
Yeah.
And that's why it was so dangerous, because your mind can't survive that. My whole point with the Limbo thing in the first place was that what happens once you reach Limbo, I always thought it was a separate state. But in fact, if he did inadvertently take him and his wife to Limbo when they killed themselves for the first time, then they shared Limbo, but then killing themselves gets you out of Limbo? Like, if that was the case, then they never really specify that. If you go to Limbo, the only way out is...
I think they made it very clear in the final shot with Saito
that you get out of Limbo, but I think the additional wrinkle is you have to realize you're in a dream.
Yeah.
For it even to occur to you to kill yourself. Because I don't think many... that's the thing. It's like you... That bolsters my theory about they kill themselves to get into Limbo, they kill themselves to get out of it, but he had to convince her it wasn't real first, and that's the idea he put in her head. So I still don't understand why. So do you still to this day believe that everything was a dream, Peter?
Not necessarily.
And what I again? What the hell is the thing that shook you from this belief? Do you understand what that is?
not particularly.
You keep starting to explain, and then you go off onto a tangent that has nothing to do with why you don't believe in the theory.
Well,
tell you why I don't believe in God. One day I was walking along and I got a lollipop. You ever had one of them rainbow-flavored lollipops? Oh, they're so good. Cherry and banana. But anyway, the reason I don't believe in God...
I don't know. My mind's blown right now.
Yeah.
I really don't know what to believe.
I think it's cool. I think it's cool that you don't know what to believe, because you know what? I'm in the same boat. I see a lot of things on one side. I see a lot of things on the other.
Yeah.
The only the only feeling I have, and it's really more of just a feeling than any kind of logical argument I can present, is they spend too much time building up these rules, building up this system, getting everything in place to show you this heist, and then they spend an hour and a half of the movie doing that, and then to just shatter it all by saying it's a dream.
It's all a dream.
The whole thing's a dream. Don't worry about any of those rules we made up, because he could have made up anything. He could have made up people are all have five assholes on their forehead now and whatever.
And they're all straight, I don't think it makes it high pressure. That's what I felt like coming out of the movie the first time.
Now, here's the difference, Jim, is that he didn't make all those rules for nothing. Just because the whole thing was a dream doesn't mean the rules were for nothing, and I'll tell you why. Because the rules were believable and necessary for the audience to know what was happening while it was happening. And at the end, they can then be discarded. It's like the husk, you know, that you discard to become a butterfly.
And I do like that theory, because it's exactly what they were doing to Fisher. They were giving him all those layers of bullshit to believe just so that he would take the idea that they implanted in him. And there's kind of a symmetry
right,
to that. But I agree that Jim,
Inception
that...
Inception is on the audience.
it's more of a feeling, because I almost feel cheated. Like, he's just misdirecting me off into one area, saying, this is the path, take this path, and then there's a path behind me that I didn't even know existed, and he's saying, well, that's actually the path you should have taken, sorry. I know I told you all these other things.
Yeah, it's kind of like we're making a leap of faith that Christopher Nolan wouldn't fuck with us in that way. I mean, he's clearly fucked with us throughout the whole movie, but he's playing fair.
Yes. And I feel that it's unfair.
He doesn't necessarily play fair at the end, because he doesn't give us a resolution.
Yeah, he does. I think he does. If you pay attention, you look at the wedding ring, you look at the thing, the fucking thing starts to wobble. That is, to me, open. I've got 100% faith that it happens in the real world. However, this limbo stuff, here's the thing. I think the answers are all in the movie. To these questions, like if you watch it enough, you can figure out all the minute details, and I hope Christopher Nolan doesn't do a Ridley Scott role and say, well, of course Decker's an android. That will piss me off. If he ever weighs in definitively about it, I will be pissed, because I think that he does have a definite definite idea of what really happened in the movie, and I also think that those answers are there. And the only way that the answers are there is if the evidence is consistent.
See, I disagree with that. I actually think...
Why? I would figure you would be on board with that 100%, Jim.
No, I totally disagree with that. I think the film works as a leave it up to the audience. You determine what you want. I've sent you equal amount of clues in each direction, so to leave interpretation within the scope of reality.
Yeah,
and possibility.
But I think there's one.
I don't like him sending me off with everything the movie says in one direction, and then saying, "Sorry, you went the wrong way."
Which I don't think he did.
And that's why I have that feeling.
Well,
that
from an artistic point of view, somebody who tries to write their own stories, I appreciate the ambiguity and the openness. And if it was truly designed to not give you conclusive evidence to prove either point, if that was how it was, I would think that was a beautiful gesture. That's pretty cool. I mean, because again, it makes you gravitate as an individual person toward what your more preconceived ideas about reality are, which is, you know, basically telling an audience your reality is your own creation, which I believe it is, because all of us every day take preconceived ideas, and we treat each day and some of us act on reality based on preconceived notions that aren't necessarily provable, you know, and it affects the way, you know, maybe I believe something that's not objectively true, and maybe it has no bearing on the real world at all, but my behavior is a real thing. And it is affected by my belief, which may not be.
Sure.
And I think that's pretty cool to actually create a movie that talks about that.
Okay, do we have any more lines of evidence we want to discuss? Because I also want to briefly talk about the other popular theories that have been floating around.
Before you do, because I want to hear them, because I haven't heard them, I have to say this really quickly, because this does not have to deal with the answer of the movie, but it pissed me off, and I want you guys to help me out here.
Okay.
The hotel level, level 2, was spinning around after the van started to fucking spin around, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Like Matrix style, right?
Right.
Where there was no actual gravity anymore in the hotel because on the layer above they were falling and there was no gravity.
They're in free fall, right?
That is an amazing idea, first of all. I thought that was pretty badass. However, why wasn't the GoldenEye level and the levels below that spinning around and out of control?
Because they did have a throwaway line where they
say that
levels like phenomenon one level happens the next level, but then it gets weaker and weaker.
For instance, Saito being injured.
Right, and he also says when they hear like in the first dream when they hear like a and they're like. Is that, he goes, I think he said, is that on the train? And he goes, no, that was too close. Saying that actually was in the next dream level up. And you didn't understand that the first time you watched it because you had no idea what the fuck was going on. But I think that...
See, I have a problem with that too, because what about the music they played in the headphones?
That was played the level above them.
No, but everybody heard it, right?
Right, because they put on the dreamers, if they put on the dream, remember, it's a dreamer's world.
That's true.
No, he heard in the second dream layer in the hotel the music that was playing on the headphones of the people who were awake, correct?
No. In every case, they slipped the headphones on the dreamer, they hit the button, and everyone in the dreamer's world hears the music.
And then that's their cue to put the headset on the next layer of sleep.
Exactly, yeah. So it does make sense. I think it's like each layer is a buffer for the layer between it, you know?
Well, that may be true, but how come there was an avalanche in the James world when the van hit the edge of the bridge?
The avalanche wasn't caused by that. It was caused by... What was...
They were trying to make a quick way to get to the thing, to get to the building, because they were running out of time or whatever, and they said they wouldn't make it, and he was like, can you do anything?
Right.
But I thought that was just for, like, the tunnels. But I guess conceivably it could be for the avalanche.
I thought that's when he blew up the Humvee on the treads is when the avalanche happened.
It seemed to me like the avalanche happened out of the blue, and it could have been sequenced with the van.
There's definitely something I need a third viewing, because I thought I remember seeing that, but I can't remember what it was, but I remember thinking the second time I saw it, oh, that was connected to why, whatever.
But the thing that's interesting about gravity is I would think it would propagate more because, like, okay, so you're weightless, you're totally weightless, and the reason you're weightless in the hotel is because you're weightless in the level above, right? In the van.
Right.
So if you're weightless in the hotel, wouldn't you also be weightless in the level below it? Or does the dreamer have to be weightless? The dreamer
of the level. That was my thing. I think it's the host that's actually the host of the level that gets the biggest effect from the level above it. Or maybe the only one that really maybe they're the perpetuator of the effect on their level.
Yeah, that's viable.
Although Arthur was weightless, definitely. And he was the one dreaming the hotel level.
Yeah.
Right.
Who was dreaming the third level? Fisher?
No.
Or Eames.
Eames was the dreamer of the third level.
Where was he at that time? Was he in the hotel with them?
Yes.
Okay,
His unconscious body was.
But he was also weightless.
Yeah.
So shouldn't they have been weightless in the...
No, because I really think that, again, the music doesn't go down past the certain level, and neither does the phenomenon. I think no phenomenon goes... The top level affects the level immediately below it, but no levels below that.
But you see what I'm saying? Like... He's weightless in the van, so he's weightless in the hotel.
Yeah.
He's weightless. He's then weightless in the hotel. Why would he not be weightless?
Because you got to understand that each level of dream that thinks that the thing, this thing's a layer above it, is the real world.
okay, but he's still weightless in the hotel as a result of the van being.
But he's
weightless.
The dreamer. He knows it's a dream in the hotel, whereas his real dream body is being affected in the van. It makes sense to me. I understand.
I don't think that makes any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
But it's consistent. I understand you saying it doesn't make sense, but it is consistent with how the movie portrays it.
I don't see how it is. I don't see how you've justified its consistency.
I just said that the music never penetrates more than one level down. None of the booms or shakes or lightnings or rumbles makes it more than one layer down, and apparently neither does the gravitational fluctuations. They don't propagate.
I did hear an interesting theory with Leo washing up on the shore, Dom being on the shore, and saying it was all his dream. Because if you notice, in like all four levels of that, you've got what you could consider waves and or water. You've got in the van, obviously, the ocean and the water coming in through the windows of the van. Mm-hmm. The hotel, you've got the glass and the rain outside, like his glass of water at the bar, the rain outside.
Yep.
In the snow level, you've got the avalanche and, well, all the snow.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of interesting, I thought, but I don't know how much.
The other thing I saw is that supposedly Leonardo has been slightly aged in the third level, or in the Sato level,
yes.
Which I think I actually do think he looks older than he does in the rest of the movie.
Which makes total sense.
Yeah, because he hadn't been there for as long as Sato, but he had been there. You know, and it taken him a while,
It doesn't show how long he's been there. It just shows him washing up on the shore and then being drugged into Saint Sato.
Right.
Supposedly by Sato's subconscious?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Who was bringing it in?
Yeah, subconscious, his agents.
Here's the wild thing. You want to hear something else crazy?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the film, when they show virtually that same Dom meets Sato in the room at the table sequence.
Yeah.
I don't think the back of the old gray man's head is different in the first scene than it is in the second. I think in the first scene of the film, he was going to meet himself. And in the end, he was meeting Sato.
I think you've dropped off the edge of the earth. firmly planted in the Looney Bin.
You've dropped off like your audio quality.
Yeah, what's that Skype cut you off, man? We couldn't hear anything.
Come back.
Of that.
You've gone too many dream levels down. Come back up here, Peter.
Yeah, like,
put this,
you know what would be so funny if we edit in the sound of the music here?
That would be awesome.
Spinning, wobbling totem.
Yeah, this is your cue to come back from the dream world.
Wobbling totem. I think we need to have.
Can we talk about some? We talk about some of the other theories I've heard, or some of them I actually came up with and then discarded.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Yeah.
One of them was that the plot was actually an elaborate inception on Sato, that he should clear Cobb's name. That's a variation of everything is a dream, except for the very end scene. That they did all this and staged it just to give Sato the idea to set Cobb free.
But that goes against so much.
Yes, it does. But I actually thought that was kind of a cool idea the first time I saw it. Sure. The other thing that I was almost convinced after the first thing was that Ellen Page was Cobb's grown daughter working with her grandfather to try to determine whether Cobb really did kill her mother.
Which I have to say is a very cool theory, and I like it, but totally not.
And I actually, the first 5 minutes of introducing her, I was convinced after a second viewing that that's dead on. But then as I started paying attention, it really didn't make sense.
The thing that was interesting that you pointed out to me after first viewing was when she goes into the anniversary suite.
Oh, she like, why did you bring her here?
Yeah, she doesn't say, who are you? She says, why are you here?
Yeah. Yeah, like,
that's true.
That's one of the reasons I thought that was true, because it's like, that makes perfect sense. And then she got mad at, like you know, like, Dom's like, why did you bring her here? Like, why did you bring our daughter?
Uh-huh.
You know, you could read it as that, but I just don't think there's a lot of other evidence that it's against it.
She dropped this bomb. She felt betrayed because he had a woman with her.
Yeah, yeah.
She steps on the same exact glass as Dom does.
Yeah.
In that level, which is pretty interesting.
Is
there any meaning to that?
Maybe. I don't know.
To say that, yes, I am related, you know?
Could be. But there's a couple of reasons why I didn't think that was the case. I don't know. Mostly because she seemed to be a lot more if she didn't act like her daughter, like just out of curiosity, seeing what her dad was up to, she'd seem to be a lot more directive in therapy terms. The other idea I heard was that I heard this really complicated theory. Have you guys heard any that Sato and is Mal and Mal is Sato?
No, I have not.
No. And
how can that be?
I don't know. I can't remember the. I wrote it down thinking I would not forget the justifications, but I didn't. I've turned out forgetting it. I also heard
that's
really
not possible though, is it? They're shown in the same scene in his dream world. Like they can't be the same person.
Right.
Yeah, they're shown at the beginning.
The other theory about another theory I heard was that Cobb is stuck in the labyrinth world, the
limbo.
Limbo. He's stuck in limbo, and the movie is about Mal trying to rescue him. And that sounds good, except for if you realize that every time we see her talking with Mal, she's not trying to get him to kill himself. She's trying to get him to stay there in a dream world with him, her. Yeah. So to me, it's a very cool sounding theory, and it fits some things, especially if you're he's stuck in limbo mode. But the fact is, every single time we see her talking, she's number one out of her mind. She doesn't act like the same person in the room, and number two, she's always trying to get him to stay there with her.
I just have a real problem with any theory that kind of builds worlds around this movie.
Yeah,
like
that you're trying to take stuff out from the movie.
Yeah.
The other one that I found was really interesting, and this could be true. It doesn't affect anything that we talked to this point, but that the movie works as an allegory about how movies are made or how Christopher Nolan makes the movie, because. And the way I saw this explained was like Dom or Cobb is the like worker, the hard work side of making movies, and Mal is the inspiration. And that the temptation is to, and the children are representative of the final product, the movie actually being made, and that's what you want to get to. All you want to do is to make the movie, but along the way, the creative side of you is always wanting to dick with it, and it's never wanting to let go, and it wants to stay in a dream world forever, and it doesn't want to buckle down and do the hard work, and wants to keep dicking with the editing and dicking with the script and doing all this stuff. And if as long as you keep down there and stay in that creative space, the movie will never be finished and never be made, and you'll never be able to see your child.
That's kind of interesting in regards to Christopher Nolan spending 10 years working on this movie.
Exactly. Kind of, editing. And the fact that the movie started off as a horror film.
Yeah.
And really? Then he decided to make it as a heist. And I was like, that's like, I could see him like 3 years into it thinking, you know, and I guess he fucked with this script forever. And that's why I'm thinking that the answers are all there, because he spent rewriting and rewriting and changing, and like all these things are rippled up and down through the dream worlds. I think that there is a good solid answer to all this. It's just you have to study it and watch it. And it's so funny because when we both walked out on the second time, we thought, well, I guess there's not as much movie to that. There's not as much of that as we thought, because we were just thinking in terms of, is the movie real or is it take place in a dream world? I think there's a hell of a lot to this movie. It's just all in the details.
I think there's a lot of.
It's a simple story.
Metaphor.
Yeah.
There's a lot of metaphor. There's a lot of different things going on. The interesting thing about that comparison to the movie I've heard, like the film as movie making, is I've actually heard each person in the movie described as a different part of the movie making process. Like Saito is the money man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Because
architect is like set design.
Yeah.
Saito's producer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Dom would be the director if that were whatever. And then Eames is like the actor because he's impersonating people. I've heard just everybody.
Oh,
in
wow.
Films,
yeah. So. I saw that same theory, but they focus on the Nolan as Cobb. And actually, the Nolan is Cobb and Mal. Because when she says in the one honeymoon, she goes, do you have any idea what it feels like to be half of a whole? That like that creative side of him versus the, you know, stick-to-itiveness. Because you have to be both as a director. You have to be intensely creative, but you also have to have this focus and vision. And that those – right. that like you're right. Everything is in the movie making process is illustrated by a character in there, but he, the director, is that dual persona.
And I think that's where a lot of the confusion comes from as regards, is this a dream? Is it not a dream? What's going on here? I think it's just simply him trying to convey this metaphor of movie making and all the similarities there. And in the process, he's done things that inadvertently could make you think that this is all just a dream, when in fact it's a rather straightforward film, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
And there's just things that are thrown in accidentally that coincidentally have this representation of it's all a dream.
I don't know if it's coincidence.
I think it's by design. I don't think it's coincidental at all.
And I do think the answers to Chris Nolan's vision is there. It's not like he's not like Chris Carter on X-Files.
I'm not necessarily sure that it is.
He's not David Cronenberg. He's not David Lynch. I think he's got the answers there, but the thing is like if he's smart, he'll never tell. And the one person, like, you know, there's going to be one person on the internet that has it figured out, and he'll never know for sure because Nolan's never going to tell.
I think that he shouldn't ever tell, but I at the same time kind of like the warring vision between creator and the other half of your consciousness.
Oh, I really
want him to tell, and at the same time think it would be poetic if he didn't. Yeah, but at the same time too, I kind of desire him to tell very strongly. And the one thing that was interesting about my viewing, because there's a big denial of the audience at the end when he doesn't definitively show the top one way or the other.
And it's fun to watch out the audience, isn't it?
Oh,
because it's the only collective moment of like where the whole audience is gripped by
at the end when he doesn't show it, when it fades to black, everyone goes, and knowing that that's going to happen. The second time is glorious. Yeah. At the end,
I bet.
Everyone around you is like, oh no.
Yeah.
I want to see that from the outside because I was just experiencing it the first time with everyone else.
Yep.
And it was a cliffhanger, nail-biting, on the edge of your seat. Oh, is this very up-in-the-air movie going to be definitively and stand definitively on anything at all? Here it is. Oh, it fades to black. What the hell? Oh, my God.
Right.
And I really felt pissed off.
If he had held that shot 10 seconds longer with it not moving at all and just spinning and then faded black, you'd say, oh, it's definitely a dream. And if he had shown a fall, it's definitely real. But the fact that he ended it quarter second after it began to wobble was like the, oh!
Yep.
It's a great, I think it that really, it's been a long time since I can remember a film generating this much debate. Even The Matrix didn't generate this much debate.
I disagree with that.
Really?
But I guess that's more debate than I'm generating now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Someone give me a kick.
Yeah, really.
Ready for my kick.
Let's go ahead and launch out of this dream.
Well, there were a couple things I wanted to like just talk about really briefly. Like things
There's going to be an outro. Jim Jones will drone on, and you not know where he'll be going. But it'll be okay.
He may
because
fuck
the
it up.
Because the cast will be over.
I thought it was cool on second viewing how much more I noticed Leo being fucked up.
Oh, because yeah.
The first viewing through, I just, like, you see the major scenes where he's, like, in the bathroom and he's, like, shaking and putting water on his face, stuff like that. But he's always interrupted and he composes himself again really quickly.
Right.
So you didn't really feel the full impact. I was slightly disappointed that Leonardo didn't really get to showcase his chops as an actor very much in that film. It was like an ensemble cast. Everyone kind of had their part to play, but which is, I guess, the movie metaphor. But he didn't really get to unleash the beast that is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, I mean, I think he acts. I'm not a huge DiCaprio fan, but I really liked his performance in this one because the reason I liked him so much in Inception was because his performance was always appropriate. It met the expectation of the scene he was in at the time, with one exception. And here's the exception. I really thought it was some, and I think Nolan or whoever did the editing of the film did a brilliant job here, because I don't think Leo was taking it where it needed to go. And that's when he was at the edge outside the building and he had just saw his wife commit suicide because she was so fucked.
No. Really? Oh, I think that was perfect.
I thought that was weak.
The amount of shock, outrage, and grief that came across in 1 second was the most – I was blown away.
I was. I felt like someone I loved had just jumped off the cliff.
Wow, yeah. Really?
Totally. Yeah. Even on second viewing, I felt that way.
Yeah, I said the same way. I looked – and you see it twice in the movie and then seeing it – so, yeah, I think it's amazing acting, and I thought it was
kind of weak.
At no point did he indulge in overacting. You're right. Like, I just want to reinforce what you said, that he acted the perfect amount. It's like what they say in Team America World Police, you know. I've never seen acting that good. I mean, it's just really, really well done. It's very, like, I always thought, like, when I heard him be called this generation's De Niro, I'm like, okay, people, calm the fuck down. Simmer down, folks, simmer down. But after Aviator, after Departed, after this, I'm actually really, really, I mean, the man has not made a single misstep in his career that I can think of. And we're also thinking that I there's only like two or three parts I can recall him not being deranged in.
Yeah.
Like that Titanic. I guess Catch Me If You Can, he was crazy too.
Well, not really.
He had some mental problems.
A little bit, but not to the degree of like Shutter Island.
No. But like, there's only been like two films that I can think of him being in where he wasn't just completely bat, you know, some type of batshit crazy or disturbed.
Yeah, he's always got some kind of high emotion in his films. I just didn't appreciate, and maybe it's just because I'm coming off losing people on my own, and I know how deep that really is as a boss. Is that when she fell off that cliff, I wasn't really feeling it. It didn't feel legitimate. And it was they always cut him off right when he says Jesus.
He says Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I actually like that because
it says Jesus and then it cuts to black, right? It snips right at that moment. I think that was a good cut because I don't think if you let that scene, that moment, last any longer, it was going to have as much impact.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that, yeah.
I agree with that, too, and I don't know why then you're saying that it was not a good scene, because I think that the emotion was powerful, it was well portrayed, and the editing... Again, Christopher Nolan can fucking edit. I mean, he can edit a film.
Yeah, the editing...
I don't know if he does or not, but whoever else can edit
George Lucas.
Oh, God.
He's the anti-Nolan.
Yeah.
If he and Chris Nolan ever shook hands, the universe would explode.
Matter and antimatter.
So, I don't think Nolan's that good. What are you saying?
I'm saying that Nolan, he is like everything in his movies matter. There's nothing that's just thrown away. Like Batman and The Prestige and Memento, there's not a wasted scene. Where George Lucas, in the prequels, 60% of the fucking film is a waste. Oh,
why are we talking about George Lucas in the same fucking sentence?
Since we already compared Nolan to George Lucas, let me compare him to who else? That maybe even this is
Ron
the other
Jeremy.
No, you've got a comparison to George Lucas. Obviously, George Lucas sucks balls compared to what Nolan's doing today. But prior to Inception coming out, people had made this comparison, and a lot of people said, no way, Nolan's not nearly on this level. But after watching Inception, I think he's starting to...
I know which director you're thinking. Say it.
The level of the directing I think he's approaching, having released Inception, is... fuck me up the ass.
Stanley Kubrick.
Thank you. That's
what I was going to say. I've heard Hitchcock, but I don't. That feels wrong. But then I saw someone compare him to Kubrick, and I'm like, that's exactly right. He's headed to Kubrickville.
He's in that direction. This is the first film that stands up to a Kubrick film. This is the first one I've actually felt like was on Kubrick's level, because Kubrick is the height of filming genius.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
However, like, I think if he continues to be allowed independent projects, then he may actually get there, because everything up until now hasn't really been a subject matter Kubrick would have ever tackled. Kubrick never did Batman.
No.
That was beneath him, you know.
He did Dr. Strangelove after all. I mean, he wasn't all...
Yeah, but that was not a comic book hero.
Just saying that he wasn't... Like, a lot of people paint him as one-dimensional. Like, he only did these, like, somber, off-the-wall, you know. But, like, Dr. Strangelove is not only wicked political satire, it's fucking hysterical.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, it's very funny. I mean, he did comedy, he did science fiction, he did fantasy, he did everything. And he did it in his own unique style, which is why he's so well-known and such a genius.
Right.
I think we have the makings of our generation's Kubrick, and I really hope that is a true statement, because I want to see more films like this one.
Okay. One other thing I thought was cool. Two things, I guess. One thing that people question a lot is how the kids are, like, exactly the same in the early scenes and at the very end, which is not true. They're actually 2 years older. If you look in the credits, it credits one daughter and one son as being 3 years old. It credits the others as being five. So there are 2 years that Dom was gone out of the country.
18 months to 2 years is what I'd say.
And also, I thought it was cool that they mentioned specifically that it's military-developed technology, because I'm pretty sure that's how it would happen in the real world.
Right, right.
It would definitely be something where they would simulate killing people in reality.
I also loved when we were watching the credits, and at the very end of the credits, they played the wake-up song. I really thought that was a cool, it's like for the audience, like, okay, it's over, time to get up, time to go to the real world.
Yeah.
I love that touch. That was a great
maybe touch. That's the final bit of evidence that the whole film was a dream.
Then who the fuck is waking up at the end? Us? Are we Cobb? Oh, shit.
No.
I don't know. The movie is great. It lit my brain on fire, as I said.
Yeah, I loved it, because, I mean, when's the last time a movie's made you think this much? I can't remember.
Yeah, the Matrix, like, remember when we were talking about in Geek Bliss, it's like we were waiting for something to set our imaginations on fire, and like Avatar didn't quite do it, and all this other stuff.
The Last
it's like,
Shitbender didn't do it.
The Last Shitbender surely didn't do it. It's like, maybe once every 10 years a movie comes along to rock your socks off.
I think that's
what it takes.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go see this again. I really want the movie at home so I can watch it like 100 times and become like a scholar.
Looking for a not at all illegal copy on a reputable file sharing site.
Mark,
it's
my
not
words.
Even out on Blu-ray yet, Aaron. I think any copyright now is illegal.
Oh, well.
It will but definitely be a huge both. DVD seller. That's for sure.
Oh yeah,
I think it's going to be massive.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see the bonus features. Like, again, what I want is like kind of like they did with the Matrix treatment, which in retrospect didn't really stand up to the scrutiny, and maybe this won't either. But I would like to see them take like 10 foremost philosophers.
Yeah,
and okay, maybe two or three philosophers,
the dream scientists,
two or three like people like Roger Ebert, or you know, like film critics and students. And a couple others, like, of, you know, like you said, a couple, like, neurologists or something, and have, like, I just want to see them tear this movie in, like, just pick its bones clean, because there's just a lot of stuff to uncover there.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, well, you guys have anything you want to add, or is that it?
Time to kick it.
All right. Let's kick ourselves out of this dream world.
All right, here we go.
In reality, we do have an iTunes account, and we are listed in the directory. And you need to wake the fuck up and put a review on there, because we are dying here, people. We need reviews.
Yeah, we're stuck. We've only got five, albeit five-star reviews.
Yeah.
We could use a couple more.
And three of those are from me, Aaron, and Peter.
Yeah, what's it going to do? Is it going to kill you? Come on.
Actually, I haven't rated us yet.
Oh, motherfucker. Okay, nice. Well, there, we can at least get to six.
Yeah, I will do it if everyone listening will.
It's packed. If you do have any questions or comments, you can email us at blueyonder@baldmove.com. Oh, mama. Or check out our forums at www.baldmove.com. Or you can call us up on the phone at 1-800-528-491. With that said, I'm Jim Jones.
And I am Peter Street.
And I'm Aaron Hubbard. Ciao.
Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. C'est payé. Mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin de balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Rien, ni le bien.